Welcome to class, everybody. This is Bio 231, November 9th. It's a Monday, and there's no practicum this week. There's no lecture exam this week, and there's a holiday this week on Wednesday. So, please don't come to class on Wednesday. Did I say it's November 9th? And we're going to finish up Heart today, and let's take a look at the schedule, because you will notice that our exam is 1 week from today. All right, so today is the 9th, and the 11th, which is Wednesday, is Veterans Day holiday, and then our exam is Monday the 16th. And it's not going to cover the Heart chapter because that's chapter 19, but we are going to cover 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. 19 will be on the last test. Does anybody have a question regarding the schedule at all? Wow, it seems really dark in here today. Can you see what you're doing well enough? Yeah? You'll have to speak up because I can't see if you're just raising your hand. Okay. So that's the schedule. And your practicum grades are online, lectures are online, everything is there, and we'll go over your practical scores in lab. Plenty of time for that. And don't forget, the lab quiz this week is the kind of like a coronal section of the heart, right? It's the open section of the heart. And I believe that's letter E in that illustration. I saw some people studying the A part of that figure. That's not quite good enough because I want you to look inside the heart as well. All right, I'll put the schedule away. And remember, the illustration that I'm showing right here is probably one of the best things that you can study, because it shows you the three things, the first three things that you should know about the heart. And you can't see a thing. That's why it's so dark in here. Well, let's see how that, see if that works. I think so. I see some blinking lights. All right, and that was figure 19.1. Okay, yeah, it's going to take a while to warm up, thanks. Okay, so I think I'm just going to ask you some questions. And you have to yell it out because I don't know if anybody's here. How many sides does the heart have? Two. How many chambers does the heart have? How many valves does the heart have? How many circulations does your body have? Two. Nice. And give me the name of one of them. Pulmonary circulation. Give me the name of the other one. Systemic circulation. Which one is longer? Which one is bigger? Systemic, because it goes everywhere, all over your body. All right, so what ventricle pumps blood into the systemic circulation? Okay, what ventricle? Remember, the heart has two ventricles, a right and a left. And I think I hear it over here, it's the left ventricle. Where does the right ventricle pump blood? To the lungs, which is the pulmonary circulation. All right, well, the systemic circulation is a lot longer. So what side of the heart has to be stronger? The right or left side? It's the left side. And when you exercise any muscle, it gets bigger and stronger. So the free wall of the left ventricle in the lab, you will notice, is a lot thicker. And even on this illustration here, I can see that the left ventricle is a lot thicker compared to the right ventricle. And so just pretend that this is me right here. I'm facing you, right? So here's anterior, and this is how we're going to view this heart. So if this guy raised this hand, what hand would that be? The left. That's right. So this is the left side of the heart. Here's the right side of the heart. All right. I'm going to go over the valves really fast. Two atrioventricular valves. Try before you buy. Tricuspid is on the right. Bicuspid mitral is on the left. And do you believe me when I say atrioventricular valve? You should say yes, because that's right where it's between, right? The atrium ventricle. There's another kind of valve right at the root of the great arteries leaving the heart. And those are the pulmonary artery, or you could say trunk, and the aorta. So here is the pulmonary valve, and here is the aortic valve. Pulmonary and aortic are semilunar valves, so they kind of look similar. Tricuspid and bicuspid are atrioventricular. They kind of look similar, similar kinds of structures. Okay, I see an arrow moving away from the heart. So what does that mean? I see this arrow moving away from the heart. What can you tell me about this blood vessel? Give me the general name for this blood vessel. Not the specific name. Is it an artery, a vein, a capillary, arteriole, or what? It's an artery, yes. Something that takes blood away from the heart, even though it's blue in this particular case. That's an artery. What about this one over here? Here is a red what? It's taking blood away from the heart. So I don't want to say vein here. Anything that takes blood away from the heart is an artery. So I see arteries in two different colors. All right, I see them in red, I see them in blue, and it all depends on what circulation they belong to. Systemic circulation, arteries are high in oxygen. Pulmonary circulation, arteries are low in oxygen because they're going to the lungs to pick up oxygen. Right? That's, so it really makes sense when you think about it. All right, so I see arteries and veins determined by the direction of blood flow. The last kind of vessel I see is something that looks like a net, a network. What the heck are these things? Capillaries. Yeah, these are the smallest blood vessels. And there's something special about a capillary. What's special about a capillary? Yeah, exchange. That's where things can enter or leave the blood. Things cannot enter or leave the blood in an artery. Things cannot enter or leave the blood in a vein because these are too thick, and you're going to see that in the next chapter. Okay, so that's pretty good about this figure, right? Make sure you understand this figure. Maybe you draw it out a couple of times. Last time we traced a drop of blood, right, from one particular location all the way around through both circulations, all the chambers, all the valves, and we also annotated where oxygen was high or low, where carbon dioxide was high or low, where exchange took place. So all that stuff you definitely have to know. All right, so that's just a little recapitulation of what we talked about last time. We got down to fibrous skeleton. All right, so I'm going to zip ahead to, before we get there, I want to talk about something that sometimes is really confusing, and that is the membrane around the heart. And remember, there's two main kinds of membranes. One membrane lines a cavity that's open to the outside world, like your oral cavity, digestive cavity, and then there's another kind of cavity that's not open to the outside world, and it has a different kind of membrane. So tell me, what kind of membrane lines a cavity that's open to the outside world? That is a, maybe I heard it, that is open to the outside world, oral cavity, that's a mucous membrane. Okay, and the membrane that lines a cavity not open to the outside world is a serous membrane. And a mucous membrane only has one part to it, but how many parts does a serous membrane have? Okay. There's two membranes plus something else. So I like to think of it as three, right? There's two membranes, the space between them, which we call the serous space that's filled with serous fluid. All right, so we're talking about the heart. Can you tell me the name of that membrane that surrounds the heart? Or tell me the cavity that the heart is in. It's the pericardial cavity. So the membrane is the pericardium or pericardial membrane. All right, so here is the heart, and I kind of don't see it well enough, so I'm going to move to another slide. All right, so here's a pretty good illustration of a heart. Let's zoom into this region right here. It doesn't matter what region we zoom into. It's all going to be the same. So we could be looking here, or here, here, or here. We're going to see the same membranes. Okay, on the outside, the most superficial, this is the strongest part of the membrane that surrounds the heart. We call that the fibrous pericardium. When we start doing our pig dissections next week, you'll see how stiff that is, not nearly as stiff as the sclera on the eyeball. We didn't see any meninges, but not even as strong as the meninges on the brain. But it's still pretty strong because it holds the heart in place. And the layer right below it, and they kind of fuse together, this is the parietal division of the serous membrane. Right, so this is going to be lining the wall of the cavity that a visceral organ is sitting in, right? Parietal layer. And what's the name of that layer of the membrane that is right on top of the visceral organ? That is the visceral division, okay? Visceral pericardium. So here's the visceral pericardium, here's the parietal pericardium, and what do we have in between them? The pericardial cavity, that's a serous cavity filled with serous fluid. All right, so this is a little bit of an atypical serous membrane, but it has all the three components, right? The parietal division, the serous cavity, the visceral division, and in addition, it also has the fibrous pericardium to hold the heart in place. All right, so those are the layers of the membranes around the heart. Another way of viewing the heart is by not thinking about the membranes, but by thinking of the layers that make up the heart. And some of that membrane that we talked about is important in understanding the layers. And does anybody recall how many layers make up the heart? How many layers? Give me a number. Okay. I'm not sure I heard a number. There are three, right? Three layers. So the most superficial, we call this the epicardium. The epicardium also helps make the pericardial cavity, right? So this is the visceral pericardium, but it's also called the epicardium. Like epidermis is right on top of the dermis, so here's the epicardium. The wall of the heart is made up of muscle, heart cardiac muscle, so this is what we call the myocardium. When people say myocardium, they could be referring to this layer, or they could be referring to the whole heart. Myocardium and heart sometimes are used synonymously. And then the deepest layer that lines every internal surface, that's the endocardium. Right, so if you think of layers, epi, myo, endo. If you think of membranes, it's fibrous, parietal, serous fluid, visceral membrane, just like that. Okay. All right, so study that. If you have a question, make sure you see me in lab or office hours, something like that. All right, so what two chambers are near the base of the heart, kind of the top of the heart, the most superior part? What chambers are up there? I'll give you a hint, there's two of them. Which two chambers are on top of the heart? The atria, yeah. So I see both atria, here's the right atrium, here's the left atrium. The inferior chambers are the ventricles, the big, powerful, strong chambers. Okay, so there is a separation between these chambers. The two atria are connected together very nicely. Then there's a fibrous skeleton, and then the two ventricles. So the two ventricles are connected together electrically very nicely. The two atria are connected together electrically, but there is no real good way for electrical signals to move from the atria into the ventricle, and it's those electrical signals that coordinate the contraction of the heart. So I want to show you that fibrous skeleton, okay, right at the base of the heart. And that's a quiz. Looks like an exam figure. All right, so here is an image or a cross-section through the heart just like this, and we can see all four valves. You told me that there were four valves before, right? Two atrioventricular, two semilunar valves that I see right here. And then I see the fibrous skeleton that holds these valves in position, right? And the fibrous skeleton makes sure that the valves can't dilate, because if they start to dilate, then the leaflets of these valves won't touch each other, and that will be a leaky valve. If valves leak, what's the usual scenario? What usually happens if you have a leaky valve? The heart fails, right? So that's really serious. So these valves are held in position by the fibrous skeleton. They're prevented from dilating because of the fibrous skeleton, and they also act as a nice point of insertion for all four of these valves. And then the last thing, this fibrous skeleton is connective tissue, right? It's just dense, irregular connective tissue, and connective tissue can't transmit electrical impulses. It's pretty much neutral that way. Muscles can, but connective tissue can't. So electrical signals in the atria have difficulty getting into the ventricles. All right, so that's what I wanted you to know about that fibrous skeleton. And then that's going to take us to some tissues inside the heart that have some very special electrical properties. All right, well, we know sometimes the heart is contracting, sometimes the heart is relaxing. Okay, and here's a good slide I want to work with. Okay, and so there are two phases. What's that phase called when the heart is relaxing? When the heart is relaxing? Oh, I'm sure I talked about this. Did I talk about it? I don't see it on the slide. Trick question. Okay. All right. Maybe I don't have it on the slide anywhere. Maybe I'll find it in just a second. Okay, a lot of pumps that you might be familiar with are pumping all the time. Like an electrical pump, the fuel pump in your car is just pumping fluid all the time. But your heart is not. Sometimes it is pumping, sometimes it is relaxing. So there are two main phases to the heart. One is contraction and the other is relaxation. The relaxation phase is called diastole. Relaxation is diastole and contraction is systole. And then after systole, then you have another diastolic period. And after diastole, the heart contracts again. We call that systole. And that just repeats itself over and over and over again. All right. Who knows something about blood pressure? In particular, when you measure blood pressure, how many numbers do you get? You get one number? You get two numbers, right? And those two numbers refer to the pressure during diastole and the pressure during systole. So you all know that there are actually two phases to the heart cycle. And what is it? It's usually the systolic number is given first, which is a bigger number, like 120. And then the smaller number is the diastolic pressure. The pressure is high at systole because, why is pressure high at systole? Like the first number when somebody gives you a blood pressure reading. Because, I heard it, because the heart is contracting, right? So when the heart is contracting, that's when the pressure is highest. And when the heart is relaxing, that's when the pressure starts to go away. All right, so the heart has to be coordinated so that it contracts and then relaxes. And then we want it to come back after relaxation. We want it to pump again. And there are some special muscle fibers inside the myocardium. And we call these connective tissues. Muscles actually can act like a nerve in a lot of ways because they can carry electrical impulses, including heart muscle. So here is a special place, right where the superior vena cava empties into the right atrium. This place over here just has some rhythmicity all by itself. It has autorhythmicity. It can excite itself and send electrical impulses away from it in all different directions. And since these are myocardial cells, they can transmit electrical impulses. This right here is what we call the pacemaker of the heart. And we also call it the SA node, sinoatrial node. So when the heart is beating with a normal kind of rhythm, we call that a normal sinus rhythm because it's controlled by the pacemaker or the sinoatrial node. All right, so then electrical signals move over both atria, and these electrical signals move very rapidly. So that's the signal for contraction. So both atria contract together. First the atria. But remember, there's a fibrous skeleton between the atria and ventricles, and it's difficult for that electrical impulse to get into the ventricles to signal them to contract. There's really only one way to do that. And these electrical impulses from the SA node finally reach the atrioventricular node. AV stands for between the atria and ventricle. These are special muscle fibers, and look, they go across that fibrous skeleton. Even though the fibrous skeleton can't conduct electrical impulses, right, these special muscle fibers can. So the atrioventricular node passes electrical signals into the atrioventricular bundle. And notice that it is right there in the interventricular septum that's separating the two ventricles. Then those electrical signals move very quickly down these bundle branches to this part of the heart. What do we call this part of the heart? The apex of the heart, right? So they just zip down through the septum to the apex right here. And then the electrical impulses start to get spread out everywhere in this particular layer of the heart. What layer of the heart is this? The myocardium. Yeah, myocardium. So those electrical signals spread everywhere in the myocardium, and that's a signal for contraction. So part of the job of the AV node is to hold on to that electrical signal before it transmits it into the AV bundle. So that allows both atria to contract first before the ventricles. I'll talk about why that might be important in just a little bit. Right? And then that electrical signal zips down to the apex, and then these apical regions of the heart contract a little bit before these basilar regions of the myocardium contracts, And that's really important because where are the arteries at? Are the arteries down here in the apex or up by the base? They're up by the base, right? So if the base started to contract first, that would force blood down into the apex and it would have no place to go. But because of this conduction system, the apex contracts first, it pushes blood up toward the arteries, then the base contracts, and that forces blood into the pulmonary artery and the aorta. All right, so that's something special about this conduction system. These fibers right here that spread those electrical impulses throughout the myocardium, these are what we call Purkinje fibers. All right, so the sequence of events is SA node gets excited first. Sometimes we call that depolarization. It depolarizes. That's an excitatory event. All of those electrical impulses move through both atria, causing them to contract. They get into the atrioventricular node, and they're held on there until both atria contract, and then through the fibrous skeleton, because electrical impulses can't just travel by themselves through that skeleton, to the AV bundle, then down to the bundle branches. And what is that speed of transmission once it gets into these bundle branches? It was slow getting through the AV node. What about these bundle branches here? Really fast, right? And I don't see any Purkinje fibers here, so the electrical signal zips down to the apex, and that's the signal for contraction of the apex first. That's where we first run into these Purkinje fibers. Okay, so it just goes like that, and over and over and over again. For a normal sinus rhythm. Okay. All right, so who's got a question? Anybody have a question? Or should I come up with some questions? Maybe I'll come up with some questions. What's the pacemaker of the heart called? Sinoatrial node. And where is that located? What chamber? First, tell me what chamber is the SA node located? It's the right atrium, very close to where the superior vena cava empties blood into. All right, and then these signals travel everywhere in the atria, but how do they get across the fibrous skeleton? What's the next structure these electrical impulses have to excite to, before they can even get into the ventricles? The atrioventricular node that slows the impulse down a little bit. The AV node then sends signals into the AV bundle, atrioventricular bundle, and the signal starts to speed up a little bit, and then it splits into two branches. We call these the bundle branches, and the impulse travels really fast. It zips down to the apex of the heart, finally into, what are those fibers called that excite the myocardium? Purkinje fibers, right? So the apex contracts next, and by then both atria are relaxed, and blood flows into the great arteries at the base of the heart. All right, so when the ventricles contract, what prevents blood from moving back up into an atrium? What prevents blood from going from the right ventricle back up into the right atrium? Yeah, an AV valve. And in particular on the right side of the heart, you should know, try before you buy. That's how you can memorize bicuspid. What's another name for bicuspid valve? Used in the same sentence. Mitral valve. Yeah, mitral valve and bicuspid valve are exactly the same kind of thing. Okay. So, let's go and look at some cardiac muscle. Right? You're familiar with skeletal muscle. What is that structural and functional unit in skeletal muscle called? The sarcomere. All right? And that gives skeletal muscle a striated appearance. Right? Is cardiac muscle. Does a cardiac muscle have sarcomeres? Yeah, because I see striations, right? So the internal machinery is the same for cardiac and skeletal muscle, but there are some differences. Skeletal muscle is linear. It's like a thread. It's long and linear. Cardiac muscle, however, you can see what? It goes to here and then branches down, or it branches up. It branches all over the place, right? The other thing that you notice is that a cardiac muscle cell only goes from this region over to this region here. They're short. All right, so cardiac muscle is short and branched. Skeletal muscle is long and linear. There are some special junctions between the myocardial cells. Then we call these intercalated discs. Because these cells are so short, when they both contract on either side, they would pull apart, but there's some special proteins, junctional fibers that keep the cells glued together physically. But there's also something else. All right, so we're looking at an intercalated, oh, here are the adherence junctions in an intercalated disc right here. Here I see some pores or channels. So things can actually move from one myocardial cell into the next. And these are called gap junctions. The things that move through these gap junctions carry an electrical signal with them so that if one cell becomes excited electrically, the one on the right, the one on the left become excited electrically. Because of this branch, the ones below it become excited, the ones above it become excited. So the whole heart, right, all the way across the heart wall, up and down and right to left, front to back, the whole heart gets excited because of these gap junctions. Right, so a gap junction is a specialization of an intercalated disc, and that makes sure that if one myocardial cell contracts, what can you tell me about the rest of them? They contract as well because of these gap junctions. Send electrical signals all over the place. All right. Does skeletal muscle have gap junctions? And would it be nice? I mean, the heart has gap junctions so that the whole heart contracts as a unit like that. What about skeletal muscle? Not a good idea, right? Because if I reached out to get a drink of Coke and I had gap junctions between all my skeletal muscles, what would happen to my whole body? It would just contract. I couldn't move anywhere. I'd die of thirst, right? So skeletal muscle doesn't have intercalated discs, and that means it doesn't have gap junctions. This gap junction just makes sure that the heart contracts as a unit. Okay. Sometimes that doesn't work properly. Or maybe some part of the heart is damaged, and that causes some problems. Let me go back to, probably this slide right here. Okay, for instance, if somebody has a heart attack, and the heart attack is when blood can't get to a certain part of the heart, and that part of the heart actually dies, right? If you have a person has a heart attack in the region of the AV node or the AV bundle, right, then electrical signals can't move from the atria into the ventricles. And sometimes that can be dangerous, but typically not too dangerous. That just means that the atria contract with one rhythm and the ventricles contract with another kind of rhythm. Two different rhythms in the heart. So there's another pacemaker that originates or develops in the ventricles, which controls the heart rate of the ventricle, and the SA node just controls the heart rate of the atria. Sometimes, right, we said that every myocardial cell can excite the one next to it. Sometimes an electrical signal, instead of moving from the apex and then up to the base, sometimes an electrical signal starts to wind around the heart, like so, and maybe even starting up at the base of the heart. So as that happens, the part of the heart where my cursor is starts to contract while the rest of the heart is relaxed. And then this little part starts to contract, right? And then maybe this part, and then this part, and this part. So the heart is not contracting as a unit. It is just sitting there kind of quivering. And when muscles are contracting, it's using up energy. But if it's just quivering and not contracting forcefully, it's not pumping blood. So that's a very, very dangerous time for the heart, because the heart needs blood, and if it's not pumping blood, then it's very susceptible to becoming injured and dying as well. And during that time, when the heart, and we call that fibrillation, ventricular fibrillation, when the heart is just kind of quivering and not pumping blood, blood is not getting to your brain. So as soon as the heart goes into fibrillation, how many seconds of consciousness do you have? 2 seconds, 2 to 3 seconds of consciousness. And our brains use up all the ATP necessary to maintain consciousness. Right? And if the heart remains fibrillating, when does your brain actually die? How long do you have before somebody's brain dies? 2 to 3 minutes. That's right. All right, so very quickly, if somebody passes out, falls on the floor, right, you don't feel a pulse, then you start doing cardiopulmonary resuscitation right away, because maybe their heart isn't beating, and by doing chest compressions, you can help beat somebody's heart whose heart is not beating by themselves. And you can probably get enough blood to that person's brain to keep it alive, keep their brain alive, but probably not enough blood to where they wake up. Right? So even though they kind of look the same before and after you start CPR, you should always continue because you might be saving somebody's life, even though they're not jumping up and thanking you right at that moment. Okay? Okay, until somebody else comes to help you. Okay, so that's fibrillation. The heart is contracting, using up energy, but that energy can't be replenished. Right? So that's a really dangerous condition. The atria can go into fibrillation as well, and that's not nearly as dangerous. All right, let's take a look at the thickness of the wall of the heart. Which one is the thickest? Is it the wall of the atria, the wall of the right ventricle, wall of the left ventricle? Which one is the thickest? Left ventricle. And you should know why, because it's pumping blood through the whole systemic circulation. Right ventricle is next because it's pumping blood through the whole pulmonary circulation. But look how thin the atria are. Right? The atria are extremely thin and weak, right? Because they only have to pump blood from where to where? From the atria into the ventricle, just right next door, just right through these valves. So the atria don't have to be very strong at all, and they're not. And as a matter of fact, when blood flows into the atria, a lot of times it just flows right into the ventricle. So the atria aren't so important. But atrial fibrillation, right? Since the heart, since the atria aren't contracting, that's not so bad, but there is a bad part to that. Right? If blood has a tendency to pool in the atria, because the atria aren't contracting, the ventricles still fill pretty much normally. Right? Blood goes through a funny transition. Because blood is a fluid, but when it sits stationary, it has a tendency to turn into a solid, a blood clot. And when blood clots form in the atria, that's really a bad thing because they can end up causing a pulmonary embolism, a heart attack, or a stroke, or something like that. All right, so atrial fibrillation by itself is not so dangerous, but it should be treated and controlled so that blood clots don't get generated in the heart. And if there are no therapies that can restore normal sinus rhythm to the atria, then the only thing left is to reduce somebody's blood clotting function by giving them heparin or Coumadin or something like that, right? So that their blood doesn't clot normally. But there's a side effect to that. What's the side effect to giving somebody what they call, in layman's terms, blood thinners? What's the side effect of blood thinners? Okay, well, you want blood clotting because when you cut yourself, you don't want a lot of blood running out of your body, right? But when you're on those blood thinners, right, you're more susceptible to bleeding when that happens. Bruising, because that's a form of bleeding, just internally. All right, so that's atrial fibrillation, ventricular fibrillation. Let's take a look at the innervation of the heart. Oh, past it. Okay. All right, so when you think of the heart, maybe think of both atria as being one part and both ventricles as being another part. Okay, you also know there's a right and left side. And I see two different colored nerves going to the heart. And that should remind you of something. What can you tell me about the autonomic nervous system? How many divisions does the autonomic nervous system have? Two. And what's the relationship between them? Antagonistic. So one is excitatory, the other is inhibitory. And here I see, right, the vagus nerve, okay, the vagus nerve going to the heart, and that's in, what, this nice blue color right here, and then I see a sympathetic nerve going to the heart. Let's look at the parasympathetic. First, tell me, what is the effect of parasympathetic stimulation on the heart? Is it inhibitory or excitatory? Does it speed the heart up, slow the heart down? It slows the heart down. Yeah, you should know that for the test coming up. What is the number of the vagus nerve? It's a cranial nerve. 10. Yeah, number 10. All right, and it is inhibitory on heart rate. It slows the heart down. So here is that vagus nerve going to the heart, and I see it going to the SA node. What's another name for SA node? Sinoatrial node. But in real life, what is it? It is the pacemaker of the heart. So here's the vagus going to the pacemaker of the heart, and it's inhibitory on the pacemaker. So if it is that going to increase or decrease heart rate? Vagus decreases heart rate because it's inhibitory on the SA node. Right? I also see the vagus nerve going to the AV node and inhibits the AV node. It slows the electrical impulses through the AV node. Right? But if I look for parasympathetic nerves in the ventricle, guess what? I don't see any. So the parasympathetic nervous system just goes to adjust heart rate, and that's it. Not the strength of contraction of the heart. Let's take a look at the sympathetic nervous system, right? That's thoracolumbar coming through the sympathetic chain, finally getting to the heart, goes to the SA node, the AV node, and you see the sympathetic nerve going anywhere else? All over the ventricles, all right? So if the parasympathetic nervous system inhibits the heart, what does the sympathetic nervous system do? Excites the heart, right? So since it's going to the SA node, it's going to increase heart rate. If it goes to the AV node, that's going to increase heart rate as well. And when it goes to the ventricular myocardium, it's going to increase force of contraction of the heart, which is excitatory on the heart. All right, so parasympathetic nervous system can only affect heart rate. Sympathetic nervous system can affect heart rate and force of contraction, two different attributes of the myocardium. Physiology will make a big deal of that. Right, so just think, when you think of how the heart contracts, there are two ways that we need to describe it in terms of rate and strength of contraction, force of contraction. And sympathetic only can, and sympathetic affects both, parasympathetic only one, only the rate. All right, so that's it for, I think, something I wanted to talk about. Okay, so I'm going to go back to that initial slide that I said was so important. What was that initial slide? This one right here. Because it shows you how many chambers? Four. How many valves? How many sides? Two. How many circulations? Two. You got to know their names. Which one is bigger? Systemic circulation. Okay. Which circulation has arteries that are high in oxygen? High in oxygen arteries, systemic or pulmonary? And I see systemic right here. Yeah, high in oxygen. What about the pulmonary artery? High or low in oxygen? Low in oxygen makes perfect sense, because where is it going? To the lungs to get rid of CO2 and to pick up oxygen in particular. And there's some special blood vessels in the lungs that allow that to happen. What are those special blood vessels called? Those are capillaries, right? And what is that process called when oxygen can enter and CO2 can leave? That is called exchange. And that's because capillaries are really thin and a little leaky. Veins and arteries are really thick and not leaky at all. So things cannot move in and out of an artery or vein. All right, so who needs to go over this figure another time? I think tracing a drop of blood was a pre-lecture reading assignment, okay, and you should be able to do that. So what I'm going to do is I want you guys to break up into groups of two people, and I want you to trace a drop of blood someplace. Where should we start? Start in the RA. What's RA? Right atrium. All right, so I got a piece of paper right here. So get out a pen so you can work together, and certainly you can, I'm going to turn that picture off, right, but you can use your book so you folks can work together. You want to work together? Okay. And you can work together. Can you guys work together? Okay. Put your names on here too, because I want you to turn it in.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to turn my recorder off or not. If I don't say anything, I think it might turn off by itself. So you two guys, You two gals work together? All right, just like I wrote it on the board last time. You need a partner. Oh, we have an orphan right here.
Where?
Okay. Okay, you guys work together. You guys work together. And we'll who wants to come over here? Sit down. Who's by themselves up there? You guys got to pair up. Otherwise, I'm going to pair you up. You might not like the way I do it. Good morning. All right, put your names on there. I got it. It's okay. You too?
Yes.
Starting at the right atrium. Okay. You too? You too? Can you guys get along okay to do it? Yeah? Okay. Okay, start. I would say write it out. Write it out. You don't have to draw. Okay, so say right atrium. What's the state of blood in the right atrium? High oxygen or low? Yeah, low. So you can put a down arrow and put O2. Put two names on a piece of paper. You can work by yourself or join somebody if you want. Yeah. Yeah, please. You can write it down. Right atrium, tell me what the state of blood is. From the right atrium, where does blood go? Okay, and then we'll correct everybody's work in just a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, do you mind doing it alone?
No.
Okay. I have a partner if you want, but if you're fine right here, that's great with me.
Okay.
Okay. Or you could ask me. Where are you at?
Up
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to kind of come around and see how things are going.
Getting it. Oh yeah, you got your oxygens, all that kind of stuff. How you doing? You got
Can
oxygen?
You check it before?
Yeah. Yeah, tell me the name of that one too. Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah, tell me the name
right
of that.
Yeah.
The whole body.
Okay, tell me what kind of blood vessels are in the lungs. All right, and what happens in the lungs? So far, so good. Tell me what's happening in there too. How's it going? Okay. I see oxygen here. You know what oxygen is like up here too?
There's no oxygen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe put that down.
Oh, because I'm on the side. How do you put no O2 and then O2 comes when it reaches
yeah.
the lungs?
Tell me what kind of vessels are there that allow.
Oh wait, which one?
Right here in the lungs. Look, there's a special kind of blood vessel right there. And then tell me the name of that process that's happening. Okay. Okay. How's it going?
Thanks.
Oh yeah, you got your oxygen. CO2 would just be the other way, right? If oxygen is low, CO2 is high.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, nice. Nice. I think you got everything. We're going to correct it in just a little bit.
Okay.
Now, can you do that by yourself?
No, I wasn't here last week.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to ask some questions so that you learn something
yeah.
from this. Maybe you should try.
Okay.
Because that's
off
a good...
Off the top of my head, go for it.
Well, look at that figure, starting in the right atrium. Do you know where the right atrium is? Labeled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I see blue, so that means low in oxygen. Hi, how's it going? Okay, and there's something in between. And then there's something in between here. Because I see an arrow only going in one direction. And without that thing, blood would go both ways. Yeah, because you have a one-way arrow right here. I like one-way arrow. What makes sure that it's a one-way arrow, not a two-way arrow? Well, Vena cava is before the right atrium.
Is it this right here?
Nope, it's right here.
That's right.
So you see right atrium, there's right ventricle. There's something between them that prevents that retrograde flow of blood. Oh yeah, you gotta know that stuff. It's an atrioventricular valve.
Oh, atrioventricular.
But you gotta know the special name.
Atrioventricular valve. What's the special name then?
Yeah, that's a type of valve. I want to know the name of it too. Look up the name of it. Hi. How's it going? So
yeah.
Okay, right atrium, low in oxygen. I like that. Right ventricle. Through the, oh, I see, you got it. Okay. So it's in the right ventricle, low in oxygen, past the pulmonary valve and the pulmonary artery. Pulmonary artery, low in oxygen? Is that sure?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm just trying to check, make sure you guys believe that. All right, pulmonary arteries to lungs, lung capillaries, exchange. All right, O2 goes in, CO2 goes out. Lungs, pulmonary veins, to left atrium, that's nice. Now it's high in oxygen. Left atrium, past the bicuspid into left ventricle. High in oxygen. How do you get back to here?
Not yet.
You're good though, that's perfect up to that point. That's nice. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah? Trying to see what's happening on that figure right there? Okay. We'll correct it in just a little bit. What's happening here? Are you guys pretty good?
Yeah.
Okay. You get all the valves, all the chambers.
vessels. Yeah. Okay. Tell me where exchange takes place. You got it. Okay. Yeah, capillaries. How many capillaries do you have here?
Two.
Nice.
Pulmonary.
And systemic. Good. Okay, I'm going to go through one more row. How you guys doing? Nice. That's good enough. I like that. Just group them all together because that's true. Okay. Tell me the name of that vein as it's getting right back to the heart. You don't need that. Yeah, you can.
Is it labeled?
Yeah, it's labeled. There's a superior and an inferior one.
How's it going?
Pretty good. You got the valves. Okay, make sure you label those valves in there.
They are.
They are?
Yeah, right atrium.
That's a chamber.
Oh.
Right atrium's a chamber, ventricle's a chamber. But what's that valve between them called? But try before you. Yeah, that's easy. It's easy to remember. Just try before you buy. And it's an AV valve, atrioventricular valve. So you can draw it out or you can write it out if you want, whichever better.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Right here.
Nice. How's it going? You got capillaries in there somewhere? You got to put them in sometime. Where would you like to put capillaries? In lungs. And then systemic capillaries between the aorta and vena cava?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, just a couple more minutes, and then we're going to do it on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Any big questions here? I like your oxygen going up and down. Systemic capillaries exchange. Nice. Those are key words. Really important to know. Okay, maybe two more minutes. You guys took a good run at it, huh? Let me see, you can't read it upside down. Right ventricle. Okay, what's between the right atrium and the right ventricle that blood has to go by?
Is it the vena?
It's an atrioventricular valve on the right side of the heart. What's the name of that atrioventricular valve on the right side of the heart? Yeah, remember, try before you buy. Try before you buy. And that's an AV valve. Okay. And the semilunar valves are at the root of the great arteries, like the pulmonary trunk and the aorta. Okay. So put the aortic valve and the pulmonary valve in there as well.
Is this right before the, that's the last step, right?
Yep. Yep, that's the very last one. Low in oxygen, and then you're back at the right atrium. Vena cava, big cavernous vein, is what that stands for. You guys are working?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What's between an atrium and a ventricle that blood has to go by?
The tricuspid.
Nice. Good. Good, good, good. Yeah. AV valve. I like it. How's it going? Pretty good?
Yeah. Got them all.
What does the lungs have that's special?
The capillary beds that interact with the outside environment. That
Pulmonary capillaries. And there's systemic capillaries, too, where oxygen goes out. You got that in there?
Actually, no, I didn't.
Put exchange in there.
I did put...
You got a capillary?
Pulmonary circuit, which I thought did include the capillary.
The whole circuit starts with an artery, goes through a capillary, ends in a vein. Yeah. So I would do capillary. And tell me exchange takes place there. Hi, how's it going? Not bad?
Right
atrium? I like that. Tricuspid, nice. Right ventricle, pulmonary semilunar valve. Yeah. Just tell me, and pulmonary trunk, just tell me the state of oxygen through here.
It's low
in all those. Nice. Okay. Lungs. The lungs has a special kind of blood vessel. And a special process is happening there. Okay. I think I have it on the slide right there. So tell me the name of that process and a special blood vessel. Okay, because here is an artery. Here's a vein. What's between an artery and a vein? Capillary. Yeah, capillary. And, yeah, it's there. And a special process in a capillary.
Exchange.
exchange. I wouldn't say it quite like that, but that's really good. That's exactly what it is. Okay, how's it going here? You have capillaries? Oh, yeah. And you got exchange? Oh, you got all the good stuff. That's nice. Nice, nice, nice. How are you guys up there? Okay. And here? Not bad?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you got CO2, oxygen. Do you have capillaries on there?
Capillaries.
Mm-hmm.
With the circuits, right?
A circuit is an artery, a capillary, and a vein. It's a whole loop.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So a circuit is like a whole loop, not a particular kind of blood vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be an artery,
mm-hmm.
capillary, and a vein.
And a vein, okay.
And there's something special that happens in that capillary.
Exchange, yeah.
Key terms, key, important key terms. Yeah, question. Ah, okay, right atrium. And then where does blood go from there?
Through the tricuspid and aorta.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Through.
Nice. Okay. Past the tricuspid into?
Into the pulmonary artery.
Ah. No, you got to go into a chamber after tricuspid valve.
Oh, I mean into the right ventricle.
Right ventricle.
Right ventricle. Okay.
Yep.
And now?
And then it goes through the pulmonary valve.
Ah, I don't see pulmonary valve.
Oh, pulmonary. You wrote it like in a...
So, okay. So pulmonary valve here.
Yeah.
Lungs. CO2 exchange. Perfect. There's a special kind of blood vessel in there that allows for capillary. Yeah, so put a capillary in there. Okay. Pulmonary veins. Left atrium. Bicuspid valve. Left ventricle. Aorta. Systemic circuit. Okay. There's something between the systemic circuit, why don't you just put artery, and vena cava. Because this artery and the vena cava and this thing in the middle is a circuit.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
So it's really not a name of a blood vessel.
Okay.
You could draw it like that if you wanted to. And then, I'll tell you what, sometimes transpose this from this graphic to just words. Line 1, line 2, line 3, line 4.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because that diagram is good, it's just maybe a little confusing for me. So I got some questions you should write down too. Some of these are really old hat for you guys now. All right, how many chambers does the heart have? Probably write it down, because I think I saw a lot of people still were having a little trouble with that. How many chambers does the heart have? Be sure you can name them. They're in two groups, right? There's atrioventricular valves and semilunar valves. So you got to know the individual name for each of those. And remember, how many sides does the heart have? Yeah, there's a right and left, and so those valves you should know right and left, because that's how they pair up. How many chambers? How many valves? Right, and then you got to know their names. How many circulations? Okay, and then names. And then, what is a circulation? I ran into that a bunch of times. A circulation is made up of a couple different types of blood vessels. All right, so What is a blood vessel that takes blood away from the heart? Artery. That's part of a circulation. An artery. Right? Artery takes blood to a special kind of blood vessel called a... Arteries bring blood to... Okay. Yeah, it brings blood to the lungs. The pulmonary arteries do bring blood to the lungs. And there's a special process that's happening inside the lungs. Exchange, and so you should know the name of that blood vessel that allows for exchange. It's a capillary, right? So circulation is an artery, a capillary, and then how does blood always get back to the heart? Always, 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 vein. That's a circuit, right? And there are two, right? Pulmonary and systemic circuit. All right, who's got a question on circulation? Like that. Was really good. Sides. Okay. You're going to have to look at a picture. Oh, here. Thought of another thing. What three structures, okay, that you name to start with the heart? Yeah, when you look at a heart, whether it's an illustration or a real heart or a model, what are three things? I'm not sure I went over this last time. So, yeah, I might not have gone over it. So number one is the apex. Who can tell me what the apex is on a heart? It's the wide end, blunt end, or pointy end? Yeah, it's the pointy end pointing down. That's the apex. All right, so that's one important thing. You always got to tell where it is on a model or a real heart. And is that difficult? No, that's easy to find the pointy end. And then the second thing is called the base. What can you tell me about the base of the heart? The widest part of the heart, right? Pretty much up by the atria, or right between the atria and ventricle, somewhere in there. That's the base. So think of a pyramid. Apex is the top of a pyramid. What it's sitting on is the base. The heart is just upside down. And then the third thing that I want you to find is called the anterior. Make sure you write this down. Anterior. All right. Thank you. So what's a sulcus? It's a depression, right? And spaces in your body are not wasted. So in that depression, there's a lot of pericardial fat, and the pericardial fat looks yellow or white. The rest of the myocardium is a dark red color, and so this really nice contrast, easy to see from even across the room. Anterior longitudinal sulcus, filled with fat. It's a nice landmark that's easy to find, just like the apex and the base. And what side of the heart is that on? It's right in the name. It's on the anterior side of the heart, right? So if you know those three things, if you know the bottom of the heart, apex, the top of the heart, the base, and the anterior side, you know exactly everything, how to orient that heart, right? You only need to know those three things, and they're easy. So you know the front, the back, the right, and the left, right? Anterior longitudinal sulcus. So if I were to draw it out, here it is. All right, don't put this on eBay. Here is a heart. Here is the apex. And that's number one. Where's number two? On top. Number two, base. And maybe not everybody knows where that anterior longitudinal sulcus is, but it acts like a candy cane stripe. Most blood vessels move from the base to the apex straight down. They just go straight down. But there's one that goes on an angle, like so. So there's a sulcus right there, some blood vessels, and this is the anterior, number three, anterior longitudinal sulcus, right there. And that's really easy to find. All right, so here is a heart, like you're looking at my heart. And I'm going to raise my hand on this side of my body.
What hand is that? What side of the heart is that? That's the left side. Here is the right side. So if I'm going to label this, here would be left, here would be right. Does that correspond nicely with the diagram that we're projecting up there right now? Do I have the right and left sides properly oriented? Like, for instance, is this the left side right here? Yes, it is. And this is the right side over here? Okay. All right. The other thing that you should know, what's an artery? What's an artery? Question mark. Write the answer down on your paper, too. Yeah. What's an artery? How do you define an artery? Everybody's got to do that. I think there's some confusion. What the heck is an artery? I see red arteries. I see blue arteries. That's okay. They can be red. They can be blue. But they all have to do what? Take blood away from the heart. All right, so here's an artery, a red one, taking blood away from the heart. That's the aorta. Here's a blue one, taking blood away from the heart. That's the pulmonary artery and the aorta. Don't forget, aorta is an artery. We just don't say aortic artery because everybody just knows it's an artery. All right? Okay, and what about this red blood vessel right here? What is that, an artery? A vein. Okay, who can tell me why it's a vein? Yeah, blood is, even though it's red? Is that true? Yes. Even though it's red, it's still a vein because it's bringing blood back to the heart. All right, here are your four valves. All right, so what's an artery? Vein. Make sure you know what a vein is. All right. What kind of blood vessel allows for exchange? Capillary. So capillary is important because there's a function associated with it. Capillary function. All right, I might think of another question. Maybe not. Give me the name of an artery that is low in oxygen. Pulmonary artery. Yeah, pulmonary. Going to the lungs, away from the heart. That makes perfect sense, right? Because it's going to the why is that blood going to the lungs? To pick up oxygen. That's right. Wouldn't go to the lungs if it was high oxygen in the pulmonary artery. It's low. Okay. Here is the last point I think I want to make. When you think of the systemic circulation and the pulmonary circulation, you should think of them as being opposite each other. Right? Opposite because the systemic artery is taking high oxygen blood someplace. The pulmonary artery is taking deoxygenated blood someplace. They're kind of opposite each other. All right, so think of systemic circulation like this and pulmonary circulation like that. Right? But they work together to make sure oxygen is delivered everywhere. All right, so just think that they're opposite in terms of their function, in terms of oxygenation. Because that's going to be really helpful when we get to fetal circulation next time. All right, so I think everybody's done. Let's write out the answer to that initial question. I can't erase the board very well. All right, so I'm going to start here. Where did we start? RA, what about oxygen? Low oxygen. This blood has to flow past? Tricuspid valve. And how are you going to know that's the tricuspid valve? Try before you buy, and again, low oxygen. After tricuspid, you go into the right ventricle, still low on oxygen. And what prevents blood from returning to the right ventricle after it gets pumped out? A valve, right? So pulmonary. Semilunar valve, and that's low in oxygen. And then into the pulmonary trunk.
And the trunk is what kind of blood vessel? Artery. And here's an artery. This is strange. Here's an artery that is what? Low in oxygen. What color is it going to be? Blue. Not on the test because just grayscale, haha. But anyway, it should be blue in color diagrams. Okay, pulmonary trunk. Then what organ does it go to? Lungs. What kind of special blood vessels are in lungs? Capillaries. All right. They have a special structure that allows for exchange. And when we say exchange, we're going to say what? Oxygen goes in. CO2. What happens to CO2? It goes out. Capillary. All right. Then it's going to return to the heart via what kind of blood vessel? A vein, and in particular pulmonary vein. All right, pulmonary. So what kind of blood is in this pulmonary vein? It's a vein. It should be high in oxygen, right, even though it's a vein? Don't be tricked by that. So, big arrow, oxygen, pulmonary vein. Then where does it go? Maybe I'll go up over here. Left atrium, high in oxygen. Left atrium, it goes past the, mitral valve, bicuspid valve, same thing. That's an AV valve. And still high in oxygen into the LV, high in oxygen. Left ventricle, it's going to pass something that prevents blood from returning from an artery. Aortic semilunar valve. And what kind of blood vessel is the aorta? Artery or vein? It's an artery, right? So it's a, and I put high in oxygen. If you have an artery high in oxygen, is that a pulmonary artery or a systemic artery? It's got to be a systemic artery. Aorta, okay. So systemic, what kind of blood vessels? Capillary. And you should know what's happening there. Exchange. All right, and you could put oxygen. You know, make sure you know which way oxygen goes. It goes where? It goes out. Yeah, CO2 goes in, systemic capillaries, and then the vena cava. Okay, because exchange took place here. Now this is low in oxygen. Vena cava is a vein. All right, so here's a vein, low in oxygen. What kind of vein is that, pulmonary or systemic? That's a systemic vein. What about a pulmonary vein? What's the state of oxygen in a pulmonary vein? Pulmonary vein, got here, it is high in oxygen because it's coming back from the lungs. Okay, so that's how familiar you have to be with it. And I have answer sheets to your pre-lecture reading assignment in there that you should be able to duplicate. Here's the sign-in sheet for today. And what about Wednesday? No class. Oh, so what's the next class meeting?
Next Monday.
Next Monday. And what's special about Monday? A lot of course points you can get.